Deutsche Welle Africa Link.
And welcome to Africa Link. I'm Mark Caldwell in Bonn. Coming up, peace talks between South Sudan's warring factions get underway in Addis Ababa. We hear how the news is being received in Juba.
Most people I talked to said, we believe that the decision will take place and will happen on the battlefield. That is what both sides, Machar and the troops, the government troops of Salva Kiir, want.
And people in Ghana have been telling us what they think of their president, John Mahama, 1 year after he came to power.
Corrupting the system, which the president has not done anything about.
Oh, I'm not sure he's done anything because I've not seen anything.
Also on the programme, the quest for a single unified visa for visitors to three separate East African countries.
Top story.
Talks in Addis Ababa between representatives of the South Sudanese government and rebel forces loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar were held for a second day on Tuesday, with discussions focusing on a possible ceasefire and the release of prisoners. 3 weeks of violence in South Sudan have claimed the lives of at least 1,000 people and driven an estimated 200,000 from their homes. Benno Mischler is a German journalist based in Addis Ababa who has just returned from Juba, and I asked him what had been the reaction there to the news that peace talks were now finally underway.
They want to be optimistic about the talks that go on and take place right now in Addis Ababa. However, many of them don't really believe in a good outcome of the talks. Most people I talked to said, we believe that the decision will take place and will happen on the battlefield. That is what both sides, Machar and the troops, the government troops of Salva Kiir, want. They don't really want a decision in Addis Ababa through talks. They want the decision on the battlefield.
Do people think there could be a ceasefire in the very near future?
You know, South Sudan is a country that went through so many conflicts. And from the experience that people have, of course they hope, but they don't really believe in that. They don't really think so. And they will think this will be a very long-lasting crisis, another one, unfortunately, in the history of their country.
Do people believe there is any alternative to the talks in Addis Ababa?
I talked to some experts from a statistics center and another one from a local newspaper, the Citizen newspaper. They said, what is there else but a power sharing? There must be a way for a power sharing. There must be some sort of way back for Machar or back to power. So what if there is no power sharing possible? So that, I don't know if that is an alternative to the talks, but I think they said it should not be something that should be totally out of question.
How would you describe the situation in Juba? Is it still a very tense city in which people are unwilling to return to their homes?
What I could see this morning in my neighborhood where I stayed, which was Tom Ping, was that the neighborhood was a little bit empty. You may have heard about the people that now went towards the city of Nimule, which is very close to the Ugandan border in the south of South Sudan. So there are many people actually who left. What I could see in the little time that I spent in Juba is that the situation on the streets at daytime is safe, or at least seems to be safe. I did not see that many soldiers patrolling the streets. However, over the weekends, I heard some shooting, actually heavy shooting, which took place after the curfew. So there is violence, there is shooting going on. However, rebels are not coming close to Juba, and the situation in the capital seemed to be fairly safe.
Benno Mischler speaking from Addis Ababa. Even though its capital is the venue for the peace talks, Ethiopia, of course, isn't the only mediator in the conflict in South Sudan. There are other players as well who have varying degrees of influence over the region. Crispin Wahideo and Assumpta Lartus introduce us to them in this Africa Link Fact Box.
Sudan's President Omar al-Bashir fought many bloody battles against the SPLM, the ruling party in South Sudan. The conflict continued after South Sudan became independent in 2011. And disputes over oil fields and the precise location of the border are also ongoing. However, al-Bashir's Monday visit to Juba highlights Khartoum's interest in a stable south. The transport of oil through Sudanese pipelines and the sale of the oil is an important source of revenue for Bashir's regime. And despite the bloody past, Bashir maintains good relations with both conflict parties in South Sudan.
Unlike Sudan and most of South Sudan's neighbors, Uganda under President Yoweri Museveni has made its preference clearly known. The Ugandan side is providing massive support for the government troops under President Kiir. Ugandan security forces are in control of the international airport at Juba. Though Museveni has been criticized for his military involvement in the present crisis, relations between him and Kiir stem from a time when both were rebel fighters. Since South Sudan became independent, the military of both countries have worked together.
Non-interference in internal conflicts is one of the primary principles of China's foreign policy. However, Beijing is showing an unusually strong interest in events in South Sudan. The Chinese Foreign Minister Wang Yi, who is currently in Addis Ababa, has called on both sides to accept an immediate ceasefire, adding that he was ready to mediate directly between the two sides. China's great interest in South Sudan can partly be explained by the country's oil, of which China is the largest buyer.
Ethiopia currently chairs the East African Intergovernmental Authority on Development, IGAD, and is leading the negotiations between Kiir's and Machel's delegates in Addis Ababa. Cooperation between the SPLM and Ethiopia goes back decades. However, unlike Uganda, Ethiopia's government is neutral in the present conflict and enjoys the trust of both sides. Economic ties are also strong. Thousands of Ethiopians moved to South Sudan in the past years in search of work.
The US has remained largely in the background, apart from a few appeals to both sides. The US is, however, one of the most vocal supporters of South Sudanese independence. For the time being, it is leaving active mediation work largely to IGAD. Like other Western nations, the US does not question the legitimacy of Kiir's presidency. However, Washington is exerting pressure on him behind the scenes to show a readiness to compromise with the rebels and thereby enable a peaceful solution to the crisis.
Crispin Wakideo and Assumpta Lartus with a look at the main players in mediation efforts in South Sudan.
Africa Link, bringing you the story behind the story.
A year ago, John Mahama was elected president of Ghana. He was thrust into the top job just months after the death of his predecessor, John Atta Mills, and a period of national mourning. Ghana has boasted some of the highest economic growth rates in the world in recent years, driven largely by exports of gold, cocoa, and now oil. But Mahama's critics might say that on inheriting this legacy, he appears to have been less than sure-footed. Isaac Kaletsi reports.
12 months ago, President John Dramani Mahama promised a new dawn to governance in Ghana. He won an election that was disputed by the opposition New Patriotic Party. The case went to the Supreme Court, and after almost 9 months, the judges confirmed his election. In his inaugural speech, he promised to fight against corruption and to build 200 senior high schools within 4 years, and 50 will be built in his first year of office. A year on, none of the senior high schools have been built. Interacting with a selected group of journalists at the Flagstaff House, the president said he took bold decisions that will bring a brighter 2014.
The private sector doesn't come and set up a thermal plant to sell energy at a loss. You have to adjust tariffs to make it attractive, or else then you must find money in the budget to subsidize the electricity tariffs. And if you do so, how do you build the secondary schools that you promised the people? So governance is a difficult business.
President Mahama had suffered many criticisms on his efforts at tackling corruption. Celebrating his first year in office, he noted that his various directives towards addressing corrupt acts within his government are on course.
I want to restate my commitment to fighting corruption. I don't have any qualms when it comes to the fight against corruption. And we'll take the steps that are necessary to ensure that the good people of Ghana's money is not squandered frivolously.
But his critics say nothing is worth celebrating about his first year in office. Communications director of one of the leading opposition parties, the Convention People's Party, Niama Kumfra, says the government can't be trusted.
They can dilly-dally. They cannot keep hiding. They cannot fool the people. Everybody can see. And if you're an ordinary person out there, and you continue to feel that the NDC, a social democratic party, represents your interests, think again.
On the streets of Accra, Kenyans had their own assessment of the performance of the president.
I think they promised 50 secondary schools in the first year, never materialized, corruption in the system, which the president has not done anything about. But I think you need to back up, and let's see the real president we voted for.
Oh, I'm not sure he's done anything, because I've not seen anything.
Whenever there's a change of government, there's a bit of the kind of difficulties and so on and so forth.
That report was compiled by Isaac Kaledzi in Accra.
Africa on the Move.
Three African countries have a vision. Kenya, Rwanda and Uganda want to introduce a single visa valid for all three countries and issued by all three countries. The aim is to boost tourism and business by doing away with unnecessary red tape and costs at national borders. This vision is now coming into focus and is close to turning into reality, as Alex Jitter reports.
The news of single entry visa was received with cheers among frequent travelers and business people in East Africa. For many, this has been seen as a chance to maximize their income from tourism and wildlife. I met with several frequent East African travelers and business people who said they are looking forward to free movement.
I think it's a good initiative because, the issue of Uganda getting a visa itself has been a hassle. You take days and days of getting a visa. It would require a lot of paperwork. So since the passports would no longer be required as a major tool to cross into other countries in the East African region, I think as a business person, I see that the paperwork will be reduced because now there will be more trust even at the border posts.
I am a Ugandan student. I study at Nairobi University. This is going to help to save time because before you had to go to the embassy to apply for our visa and it would take days.
The development will definitely increase competitiveness in the three economies. Uganda's Deputy Minister for Internal Affairs, James Baba, says this was long overdue.
East African integration is now a reality, and the nationals of East Africa now want to traverse inside and outside East Africa freely to do business, for education, for the pleasure, for tourism. The countries that don't have a common national identity cards yet for them to use what they have. Just to facilitate travel of up to 6 months.
Although the arrangement was meant for all the East African countries, Tanzania and Burundi, the other members of the East African community, have however rejected the proposal. Tanzania was concerned that the plan had not addressed the security issues involved in screening the incoming tourists or nationals moving across borders. Chris Opoka, a member of the East African Legislative Assembly, the regional parliament, believes Tanzania and Rwanda's participation is very important to the success of the integration process.
But it should not be limited. We are East Africa. There's not three countries. It's five countries. The good thing is to create the necessary confidence. It should go to all the countries. Programs and activities should be implemented bearing in mind that this is a people-centered community. And so we must walk the talk.
The single entry visa was meant to begin on January the 1st, but due to logistical reasons, it has been pushed forward until all the countries in the agreement harmonize.
Alex Jitta in Kampala. While on a three-day visit to Kenya, the head of the International Monetary Fund, Christine Lagarde, has hailed that country for its efforts to sustain economic growth and curb inflation. 3 years ago, Kenya secured a $750 million loan from the IMF to be paid out in instalments as certain conditions were met. The final instalment was handed over in December when Lagarde praised Kenya for its fiscal discipline. Kenya is classified by the IMF as a low-income frontier economy. President Kenyatta wants the country to achieve middle-income status by 2030. Alfred Kitty in Nairobi has the story.
The IMF Managing Director's visit to Kenya comes at a time the country has just successfully implemented a three-year extended credit facility ECF program worth over $750 million, supported by the International Fund from 2011. The main aim of the credit facility was to help the country address external and internal shocks, as well as other threats that the economy experienced in 2011, which included the global financial crisis, high prices of energy and commodities, as well as drought. Speaking after meeting President Uhuru Kenyatta, IMF Managing Director Christine Lagarde said,
"Your country is setting standards in terms of successful completion of the extended credit facilities that was put in place 3 years ago. You're setting standards in delivering on the promises that you made to the people by delivering on the 2010 constitution or delivering on the program of reforms that you have identified as necessary for the growth of Kenya to set standards in East Africa."
President Kenyatta was keen to spell out the various interventions that his government is undertaking to continue making Kenya the region's economic leader.
"We are working around the clock to accelerate growth through investment in infrastructure, enhanced regional integration, and targeted support for small and medium enterprises. We are focusing on improving the road network, expanding energy generation and distribution, as well as building modern rail and ports so as to create jobs and to grow our economy."
On her part, the IMF boss pledged to continue supporting Kenya on its path to economic recovery.
"We are delighted to have been partners, to continue to be partners going forward, to enable your country and your economy to continue to set standards."
This growth has contributed to higher living standards and poverty reduction. But the IMF has warned that the continent still faces immense challenges. Richard Patrice Okoth, an economic consultant based in Nairobi, explains why this growth is not felt by the common man down the ladder.
"Growth at the grassroots level, things are different. And definitely that index is only reflective of a certain portion of society. The banks, they are having positive growth. Each and every bank is recording massive profits. For the common man, definitely it's not. But for the corporate world, they are having something to celebrate."
The IMF also adds that sub-Saharan Africa must grow faster to address pressing social problems and provide jobs for its young and growing population.
Alfred Kitty reporting from Nairobi.
Making a difference.
Gabon may be an oil-rich country on the coast of Central Africa, but not everybody benefits from that mineral wealth. 20-year-old Eric is a blind rapper who sings to escape the reality of sleeping rough on the streets of Libreville. He wants to raise the awareness of his fellow Gabonese to the social injustice in their country. He sings and plays by ear, transforming the discontent that he hears around him into political songs. It's his way of making a difference. From Libreville, Guy Amonko reports.
"Une chose est sûre que je vous parle de mon Gabao, de l'estuaire où à la thème on n'est pas solidaire, on vit dans le mensonge et on a la langue de vipère."
Salut à tous et à toutes.
Hello everyone, let me introduce myself. I'm Eric La Fleur de Amour, the flower of love. Let's say Dan's mon, Gabo, pleads the cause of Africa. It's an observational song.
C'est une chanson observatrice.
On est victime du sida, du chikungunya, du palu ou de la grippe aviaire.
Eric, a 20-year-old rapper from Gabon in Central Africa, sings what he calls observational songs about his country. The young man, however, cannot literally observe. Since he was 2 years old, Eric has been totally blind.
It's not an obstacle. I have a visual handicap, but this does not mean I cannot sing. My mouth sings, not my eyes. My brain reflects, not my eyes.
Ce n'est pas les yeux qui réfléchissent, mais plutôt mon cerveau.
Hip-hop culture is extremely popular in Libreville, the capital of Gabon, where most young men and women dream of living the life of American hip-hop superstar Jay-Z. While many sing about love, money and success, Eric prefers to talk about what's stopping the Gabonese people from benefiting from the development of their country: corruption, social exclusion, unemployment and lack of democratic representation.
Si je ne mange pas bien, pourquoi ne pas dire à mon père que papa...
It's my duty to sing so that things change. If I don't eat well, why wouldn't I tell my dad that? Daddy, listen, I'm not full. Am I going to hide my hunger? So if the country is going bad and those who are governing us, we don't tell them, how can we move forward?
C'est à moi de chanter pour que les choses changent.
On paper, Gabon is a democracy, but in practice, there is no political opposition. President Ali Bongo inherited the power from his father, and his party won 95% of the seats in parliament during the last election, sparking many doubts about the accuracy of the vote. Eric is building a reputation for exposing this kind of scandals. Every day he goes to one of Libreville's main market districts, Mbolo, to sing on the street and sell his self-made CDs. Little by little, he's become the voice of the street vendors and of the unemployed young people who hang around the market.
When we have a real democracy, these kinds of geniuses will express themselves. As long as democracy is just a word, we are afraid of these kinds of truths.
He is fighting injustice. He's like Robin Hood.
He is very talented, that's all. He has eyes to see, eyes that are more open than ours, even if we can see.
Eric lives off what he earns by singing on the street. He doesn't have a home. At the time we met, he was temporarily staying with one of his older brothers. Aubrey is the only one in the family that supports Eric's ambition in the music industry. He helps Eric with burning CDs and finding gigs to play at.
He has his own way of seeing. His way of seeing is listening and touching. As soon as he hears someone talking, he takes what the person said yesterday, he takes what the person said today, he mixes everything, and he sings. This is how he writes. He's the only disabled person in Gabon that can walk around alone, that sends messages, that he does everything by himself.
And that report was by Gaia Manco in Libreville. Before we leave you, a reminder of our main stories. South Sudanese rebels and a government delegation started peace talks on Tuesday to try and end the fighting that has brought the world's newest nation to the brink of civil war. Ghanaians have been mulling over their president's performance in office 1 year after he assumed power. And there have been words of praise for Kenya from the head of the International Monetary Fund. And there we end this edition of Africa Link. Do let us know what you think of this programme in a text message to 49160957595510 or in an email to feedback.africa@dw.de or a letter to Africa Link DW 53110 Bonn, Germany. Thank you for listening. We'll be back again at the same time tomorrow. Until then, this is Mark Caldwell in Bonn.